Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
We are not in a position.
Smartphones, handheld computers, and a wide variety of packages of telephone, television, and internet services have become an important part of our social, educational, and business life. The internet has evolved from just an ancillary service for enthusiasts into an essential platform for personal and commercial interaction with an enormous impact for individuals, businesses, and the agricultural industry as a whole. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seawert. In today's world, having reliable internet access isn't just a luxury. It's become vital to a thriving and progressive society. But less than half of rural residents in central and northern Wisconsin have access to high-speed internet. Today, we'll discuss ongoing efforts to improve broadband access in rural areas and the impact that those efforts have had so far. Joining me today is Steve Bowder, Director of Engineering for the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board, Stacy Johnson, who is Executive Director of the Oneida County Economic Development Corporation, and Phil Heitmanek, who served on the Joint Committee on Rural Broadband. Phil also serves on the Oneida County Economic Development Council's Broadband Committee. Steve, Phil, and Stacy, welcome to Route 51. So good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Shereen.
We will take listener calls and questions, too. You can certainly join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Steve, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with you. I'd like you to define broadband for us. How is it different from, like, dial-up or DSL?
Well, that's a really good question. And it's kind of a sliding scale based upon the technology used. But here, the Educational Communications Board, kind of the benchmark for us is 20 megabit service. And you'll hear different numbers from different people. And, of course, if it's a fiber provider, 20 megabits per second is they do 1,000 megabits per second to the home. So depending on the technology, kind of the threshold is 10 to 20 megabits per second.
Okay. And then what about upload versus download? You hear upload and download. What requires higher upload speed, for example?
Well, if you're running a home business or any sort of business, not just a home business, especially an internet-based business, then you really care about the upload speed. If you are ingesting most of your information off the internet, of course, you don't care that much about the upload speed. It's all about download speeds. So it just depends on the nature of the business or the nature of the use that you're – if you're doing nothing but streaming Netflix, you don't really care at all about the upload speed. It can be it can be asymmetrical.
Okay. All right. Phil, you served on this Joint Committee on Rural Broadband. What is that exactly, and what was it created to do?
It was created to first of all, take a look at the needs of the rural communities in Wisconsin. What are the services that they are missing out on that people in the cities have as a result of having rural broad or high-speed internet service? And the second part of the committee's work was really to help define the criterion that were used by the Public Safety Commission, or Public Service Commission, I should say, to award grants to a variety of entities out there, municipalities, communications providers, and other entities. The state had, I think, $7.5 million a year for 2 or 3 years in a row, and these grants were awarded to applicants throughout the state. And what we did was help figure out what the criterion would be for these applications to determine how much money would be granted or whether or not the application was valid or not.
So what kind of criteria did you rely on, really? I mean, what was that all about?
Well, it was, first of all, definitions, you know, what the entity was trying to do, what, you know, what kind of service were you trying to provide to what type of customer, how many customers, how scalable was the proposed project? In other words, could it grow from the original proposal? I think one of the big things was an examination of who the potential customers were and what their needs were. We spent quite a bit of time in the committee just hearing presentations by a variety of entities such as hospital groups. Telemedicine or remote medicine is one of the main potential uses of broadband internet in rural areas, because a lot of elderly people that live out in the woods, let's say, they have a hard time getting to the doctor. So is there a way that the doctor can come to the patient over the internet? And, you know, there is a potential use. Probably most important, though, was the fact that today's elementary and middle school and high school students cannot do their work without internet access. And we found that in a lot of rural areas, mom and dad had to pack the kids up and drive them over to McDonald's or something to get high-speed internet for them to do their homework. And that's wrong. That just isn't right.
Well, and it's hard for us, I think, in rural areas like Wausau. It's hard for us to even fathom that, because it's so readily available here. We take it for granted.
Right.
But that's not the case in rural areas, in many rural areas.
Yes. Usually it's driven by the amount of – well, frankly – in rural or in urban areas such as Wausau and other, you know, more developed centralized communities, you have cable television available. Cable is one of the main providers of high-speed internet in the cities. And once you get out of town, it's basically too expensive for the cable company to run their fiber optic cable out to where some of these remote areas are. And as a result, there is no service available for those people, and they have to rely on lesser grades of service such as telephone company DSL and dial-up in some cases, which is the bottom of the ladder. It's good for reading an email, and that's about it.
Okay, Phil Hypemanic. Stacy Johnson, Executive Director of the Oneida County Economic Development Corporation. I'd really like to get your take on from an economic standpoint, what having access means to folks in Oneida County.
Sure. I have to kind of reiterate on the education. You know, with anything economic development related or sustainability of a community, it starts with education. And when we have a portion of our population that doesn't have access, it really can have a devastating effect. A good example of why broadband can make such a difference, we recently went through a rather large closure here. It was over 300 jobs, which in a rural community could be quite devastating. And one of the ways that we were able to put those folks back to work right away was by taking a company, a very large and growing company, and instead of having our community members relocate to that company, the company came here, did some initial testing, realized that, hey, we have this broadband connection that they didn't assume would exist. And all of those positions became telecommute or work-from-home positions instead. So we were able to not only retain our community members, but grow an entire new business, one of the largest growing businesses actually in the nation here, because we have this connectivity that other communities may not have. So, you know, anything, the one constant with economic development right now is change. You know, we are in a time of extremely rapid growth, from our industrial manufacturing partners to small business. Technology is changing the way we do business, how we learn, how we communicate, you name it. And we have got to be competitive and be able to provide the platform for those businesses to stay and to have access to transferring data at the rate that they need to have. So yeah, I would say it's essential, as essential today as transportation is, to the economics of any community, but especially rural communities.
All right, Stacy Johnson, Executive Director of the Oneida County Economic Development Corporation. Steve Vouter, I'd like to hear from you as a Wisconsin Educational Communications Board representative. What is the board's role in broadband expansion? In other words, I mean, why is your organization so invested in this?
So at the core of ECB is our commitment to K-12 education, technologies related to K-12 education, and that's our role. We are always looking for ways to improve access, to provide access. Especially, we're looking for ways to close the homework gap that your other two guests have already spoken to. So we have created call it a working group. It's not even that formal, but we've gotten together with folks at DPI, Department of Public Instruction, folks at PSC and DOA. And for the past several months, we've been exploring ways that ECB, Educational Communications Board, can help specifically with K-12, the homework gap in the K-12 sphere. One of the things we've done is we've partnered with CISAs. We had a pre-existing agreement with one of the wireless broadband carriers, Sprint, that provided a substantial credit to ECB, a substantial monthly credit for service. So we're working with the CISAs and others to help us distribute broadband wireless devices to schools that would then in turn be checked out to students so they could take them home. And for those who have Sprint access at home, and of course, that's not everybody. The more rural areas don't have any wireless broadband access. But for those who have Sprint access at home, the homework gap has been closed for them. Okay. And this is all ECB is doing this as part of this service credit that we have from Sprint. We have a number of other initiatives that we can talk about as we progress along in our discussion today, if you'd like.
Sure. So Wisconsin ranks 36th overall for internet connection. That puts us well into the bottom half. Part of the problem is cost. Later in the program, we're going to hear from Democratic Representative Ron Kind. But here's what State Senator Pat Teston had to say last week in an interview with Wisconsin Public Radio about current efforts underway to help mitigate that.
Well, it's certainly a problem that is being addressed both at the federal level as well as the state level. So Wisconsin is going to see a huge investment through the federal level through the Connecting America Fund 2 program. And that's money that is being delegated from the federal government to some of the large providers that you may be aware of, such as AT&T and other large networks such as that. At the state level, we've, through the Public Service Commission, have created broadband expansion grants. And these go towards smaller providers that go into truly underserved areas. We live in a day and age when high-speed internet is no longer a luxury, it's a necessity. And we want to make sure that wherever you live in the state of Wisconsin, you can have high-speed internet. And so a prime example, back in the 2017 budget, we had a significant investment in broadband expansion grants, $23 million, and an additional $7 million go to the TEACH program. And then in this past budget that was just signed into law by Governor Evers, we upped that investment for broadband expansion grants to $44 million. And so in that time frame, from 2014 to 2018, we have connected over 4,000 businesses and over 75,000 households with high-speed internet. And so we're making significant strides in the right direction.
Okay, that was Senator Pat Teston, his comments about what's happening at the state level. We have to take a break in just a moment, but Steve, very quickly, what's your reaction to that? Are those efforts going to make a tangible difference in Wisconsin?
Indeed they will, and it's key that your listeners understand that there is no magic bullet here. We need to employ every resource that we have and every technology at our disposal to solve these issues. And there's no one technology that's going to solve every one of these issues. So it's just key that we keep an open mind, be open to evolving technology, and employ resources, especially those that Senator Teston was talking about, the grant resources, where they can best meet needs.
All right. Steve Bowder, Stacey Johnson, and Phil Hypemanic are guests today on Route 51, discussing the ongoing pursuit of better broadband access in central and northern Wisconsin, especially in those rural areas. You can join the conversation, too, at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Steve Bowder, Stacey Johnson, and Phil Hypemanic are guests today as we discuss efforts to improve broadband access and internet speeds in central and northern Wisconsin, especially in those rural areas. We'd love to hear from you, too. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Stacey, I'd like to come back to you and talk just a little bit about tourism, because I would imagine that tourism is incredibly important for Oneida County. How important is having that rural broadband access to the tourism industry?
And I'm sorry, you cut out at the very beginning of that, but was that question posed to me?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I will repeat that. I was talking about the tourism industry, and I know, you know, Oneida County, rich in its lakes and natural resources, just a great place to vacation. But it's hard for people who are looking for a place to rent, to visit, to find a place sometimes that has that broadband access. And I guess I'm curious, from an economic standpoint, from your point of view, how important it is to Oneida County to make sure you have that.
Oh, it sure is. And even with tourism, yes. I mean, I don't think you can go any place today without people on their phones and they're looking up apps as to where to have dinner or what to do or how to rent your kayak and you know, kind of three steps ahead. But even if we look a little bit below that, it's, do we have access at the state forest? Do our DNR, you know, workers have access to cognitivity so that when they're on the state forest and there's an issue or there's work that has to be done, are they able to communicate that back to base? It all causes a delay in the development of what we have here. So, you know, I think it plays a role in every single aspect. There's two companies right now that are actively working on building apps here in the Northwoods on exactly what you're talking about, just all the different wonderful events that we have and recreation opportunities and festivals and these wonderful things that we have here in a way that people can see it on their phone and can plan in advance. And part of that research is, how do we take what we have here as far as our connectivity strength and do more with it than what we've been able to do with it in the past? So it's essential. It's part of everybody's daily life, just like a cell phone is in today.
Yeah, I was telling Phil off the air that my family likes to travel to areas throughout northern Wisconsin just for long weekends. We rent a lot of properties on Airbnb and VRBO, and we have to find a place that has internet. And sometimes I'm flabbergasted when I look at Crivets, for example. I only found perhaps two or three properties that actually had internet access, and for us, we can't go anywhere without it for business reasons, but there are other reasons too. Phil, let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about the safety aspect too.
Safety, public safety. I don't know. The one thing that I found most interesting about this whole problem is that it is directly related to how much money we're willing to spend to get internet access out to some of these remote areas. And as Steve was saying, there is a whole host of different technologies that can be used to extend the internet out. You know, if we could snap our fingers and have perfection, the way to do it would be to run fiber optic cable to everyone's household. Then you would have virtually unlimited internet access everywhere. The only problem with that is it costs an incredible amount per mile to run fiber optic cable, which then makes it economically unfeasible to serve these remote areas. And I'm not talking necessarily about just homes in the remote area. I mean, we heard requests from people who visit the National Forest or the State Forest. Why can't we get Wi-Fi there? You know, and it makes you wonder sometimes, all right, you're going to a national forest. Do you really need Wi-Fi at a national forest? But we find that the tourism and visitation from the urban areas goes up in an area that has internet access available. It becomes a very important aspect of their vacation plans, as it is for you folks when you travel around. So now you have to identify some compromise technologies in a way, you know, compromise vis-a-vis fiber optic cable. Fixed wireless is what we've ended up going with in Oneida County. We have a partnership with a wireless internet service provider in Oneida County, and he is busy building towers and trying to identify population centers for service. This is a technology that is much less expensive than fiber optic cable and only a little bit less capable in terms of bandwidth delivered to the final destination. So, you know, it really comes down to how much are we willing to spend to get access to that furthest away place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a trade-off, unfortunately.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Earlier this year, U.S. Rep. Ron Kind joined the House of Representatives Rural Broadband Task Force. It's a bipartisan group that's studying the issue. He represents portions of eastern and central Wisconsin, and here's what he had to say last week about how technology has changed, as we've been talking about, and the impact broadband has on economic development. This is an interview, a piece of an interview that Ron Kind had with Wisconsin Public Radio last week.
Well, it is a beautiful district, Dean, probably one of the most beautiful in the nation, but it is large, it's rural, it's diverse. You've got a mix of urban, suburban, and a lot of rural, small communities, too. And, you know, when I was first elected back in 97, the iPhone wasn't even invented. You know, the social media that has exploded in the last 8-9 years didn't even exist then. And so much of the economy being driven by high-tech and information super lanes is something that poses one of the great, unique challenges, especially throughout rural America and this congressional district. So I was happy that I got appointed to the National Rural Broadband Task Force so we can do a deep dive into the mapping of the areas to make sure that we're getting an accurate assessment as far as where the connection is occurring and where it's pulling up short, and then assessing the multitude of programs that are meant to address it. And that, is, I think, is part of the problem. It's just so multifaceted in so many different federal agencies and federal programs and even at the state level to try to coordinate all that to maximize the resources that we have is a real challenge moving forward. The state as a whole ranks, I believe, 36 out of 50 when it comes to broadband connectivity. So even our entire state is lagging in regards to the national average, and that's not good. It's not good for economic development. It's not good making sure that the rural areas have a chance of being resourced to succeed in the 21st century global economy. It's crucial for families, businesses, farmers, but it's essential for the young people. And if we don't want to see a flight of young people from rural to urban, you got to get them broadband connection or they're going to move to where they can get it. This is a huge economic development issue.
Okay, that was U.S. Representative Ron Kind, his comments on his views as the bipartisan Rural Broadband Task Force. Steve, I'd like to hear from you. What role do you think that state and local governments need to play in expanding broadband?
Well, this is such an interesting topic, Shireen. On one hand, broadband is available now where it makes business sense for private for-profit companies to deploy it. The next, and of course that's in most urban and suburban areas. The kind of the next tier is the telecommunications cooperatives who do rely on government funding or government granting to a certain extent, but not to the same extent that Representative Kind is talking about. Those telecommunications cooperatives can actually extend fiber optic to the home in a number of cases, even in rural areas, based on some grant programs. But that leaves so much of Wisconsin without service or with limited service. And there is not a company in the world that's going to tackle that problem because it just does not make economic sense. That's the role for government. That's where government can step in and say, okay, we recognize this as a problem. Here are some solutions. And here is some funding, and that's the stage. That's what we're talking about today, these rural areas without any broadband wireless access, other than we haven't talked about satellite. Satellite has its own set of disadvantages. One of the only advantage, really, of satellite rural broadband is coverage is everywhere. There is a whole litany of disadvantages, one of which is cost, of course, but others, throughput and latency or delay. So satellite broadband is available. Doesn't really meet the 20 megabit per second threshold that we at ECB have kind of set. So anyway, government has a role to play to help out using a portfolio of technologies that we've talked a little bit about. Fixed wireless is one of them, but there are many, many other technologies that are available. Many grant programs, both at the federal and state level, to pursue deployment of rural broadband access. And the role ECB plays is execution. We can help make this happen. We're towers and transmitter people. We can help where folks need towers and transmitters, which is the fixed wireless world, the different technologies within the fixed wireless world.
Okay, we have a caller, Paul from Tomahawk. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Hey, good morning.
Paul, you had a question about partnerships. What were you wondering?
Well, I live out in the country down a dead-end road, and they've been able to run pipe in natural gas, and we just received underground electric, and both at two different times. And it just seems to me that why aren't people talking to each other about what they're doing and bundle all these projects together to cut down on cost? And to me, that seems a good rule for government coordination. And I'll just listen to what your response is. And by the way, I have to use satellite, and it really is pricey.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Paul. That's Paul from Tomahawk. Great question. Who do you think can best answer that? Phil,
the reason I was going to comment on that is one of the things that we talked about in this joint legislative study committee was the habit that the public utilities have of digging their own holes on the side of the road. And it would really be a wonderful thing if these entities could get their acts coordinated with one another and make one trench with power and gas and any kind of telecommunications cabling, be it wires or fiber optic cable. That means you only have to dig once. That's sort of the byword. As far as Paul's case at the end of the road, first, for someone to actually run a wire down to him, they would have to be probably more than one person on that road in order for it to be economically feasible for a cable company or even the telephone company if they were going to provide service other than DSL, which comes over the regular phone line anyway. There would have to be an economic case for it. That's the problem there. So, unfortunately, just digging the hole doesn't solve the problem.
Steve, what's your take on Paul's question? I mean, is there a partnership that could work in this case?
The answer is yes. And Paul has put his finger on one of the major obstacles here. What we have working against us is over 100 years of momentum of corporate culture that, the gas companies aren't interested in facilitating other companies. So here is another role for government to play. Government can, whether by regulation or coercion or simply communication, this is a role that government can and should be playing, helping those who are putting stuff in the ground or encouraging those who are putting stuff in the ground to include a whole suite of services, whether it's gas and cable, gas and fiber, water, it doesn't matter. People are, Paul is exactly right. There's a lot of trenching going on, and there doesn't really need to be separate trenches for each one of these.
Another issue is just the permitting process. If you want to dig a trench somewhere, occasionally the DNR will, have to do some massive study to dig a 10-foot trench somewhere. I know that one of the things we discussed in our committee was is there a way that we can work with the myriad of organizations that have authority over issuing permits for excavation and trenching, you know, to try to speed up the process? And, you know, in Oneida County, I know we had an issue in the very beginning when we were expanding the fixed wireless system in throughout the county with the local municipalities just issuing permits to do the construction that we needed to do. And as you know, as time went on, the county became more and more cooperative to the point where basically the county was telling the individual townships, just let's get this done, make it happen. We don't have to do 27 research projects to decide that we really need to have this facility built or this trench dug. And honestly, it's gotten to the point now where it just, you know, it's a rubber stamp almost just to get these internet facilities put in, which is what we needed.
So the municipalities are buying in.
Yes.
But how time consuming is the permitting process?
Well, it can't. It used to take months and months. I mean, the conditional use permit to build a tower was probably 3 months to 4 months of time to go through all the approvals and meetings and everything else that needed to be done. I know it's become a lot more speedy in the past year and a half or so, just because everybody's getting behind the effort. I mean, that was another problem. A lot of the city and town fathers didn't understand the need for this internet service. And as time has gone on and the voters have talked back to their elected officials, now everybody's getting the message that people want this, people need this, and it's having a direct effect in how fast at least the county and township governments are moving up in Oneida County.
Stacy.
So with respect to tower construction, Phil, let me just interject here.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. Tower construction has become easier with local municipalities because of broadband wireless. I've been building towers for over 30 years, and I can or coordinating the construction of towers. I can tell you on a federal level, it has become exponentially more difficult.
Yes.
And it's interesting because the FCC is really the controlling authority when it comes to tower construction. And they're also the folks that are pushing rural broadband wireless. So different bureaus in the FCC. So there is definitely a conflict at the FCC about this. Much of it is based on federal EPA regulations, though. The FCC is just enforcing federal EPA regulations. But, yes, constructing a tower today, getting federal permission today, is much more than 3 or 4 months. Now, there is a threshold. I believe it's 200 feet.
It is.
If you're 200 feet or below.
That's what the tower maximum that these wireless internet service providers are using, 200 feet and under. Basically, there's no federal anything. It's just if the local municipality says it's okay, you put it up. If you go over 200 feet, then you're into a federal registration and lighting requirements and so forth.
All right.
Yeah, an environmental assessment, and also, of course, the trade-off there is 200 feet with fixed wireless doesn't really get you much. I mean, a 5-6 mile radius is about all you get from 200 feet.
Right, but you know what? In Oneida County, that works pretty good because we found that the populations that you're trying to serve tend to be clustered around lakes. And if you locate those towers in a strategic position, you can hit most of the population with the fixed wireless. And the terrain there is very irregular, so you really, you know, you're not going to be able to go all that far anyway because the customer will be shadowed by being in a valley or something.
All right, we do need to take a break. Steve Bowder, Stacy Johnson, Phil Hypemanic, our guests today on Route 51. We're discussing the ongoing pursuit of better broadband access in central and northern Wisconsin, especially in our rural areas. We'd love you to join the conversation, too. Call us at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Steve Bowder, Stacey Johnson, and Phil Hypemanic are guests today as we discuss efforts to improve broadband access and internet speeds in central and northern Wisconsin, especially in rural areas. We'd love to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. So it isn't just access, it's also speed. How important is the speed? Phil, maybe you can answer that.
It kind of depends on what you're trying to do. If all you really care about is reading an email, you can get away with dial-up. If you're interested in some use that involves browsing the World Wide Web, you need a little bit more speed. At my house right now, I am lucky if I get 3 megabits per second out of my DSL service from my local phone carrier up there. And that serves us as far as web browsing and so forth, but I don't have enough speed to stream a movie onto my TV set from Netflix. I'm hoping that as soon as the fixed wireless internet reaches my home, which hopefully will be fairly soon, then we'll be able to graduate to, say, 25 megabit per second speed. The other problem is if you have a family and you have, say, 5 megabits per second, if there's one person using that, using the internet at any given time, that's not too bad. You can do pretty much everything you want to do. But if you have a family, two or three kids, mom and dad, and you're all on your devices, everything slows way down. And that's a phenomenon that people that live in the cities, they never experience that. But out in the in the rural areas, you have a limited amount of speed, which really kind of limits how many people can be on at any given time doing something substantive with the internet.
Sure. We have a caller, Faye from Minocqua. Thanks for joining us, Faye. Faye, are you with us?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
What was your question?
Well, I just heard the end of that, and we have that same experience. Because of all the tourists in the area, we get our internet at home through the hotspot from our cell phone provider. Mm-hmm. And also on our phones, the internet is very, very slow when there are so many tourists in the area in the summertime. My second point had to do with a tower that was supposed to be put up within 5 miles of us earlier this summer. And we received a call from the provider in June that they couldn't do it because their manufacturer couldn't get the steel due to the tariffs.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Faye. What do you have to say about that?
Wow.
Wow is right.
Yeah. Well, that's another one of those places that the ongoing issue that we have in this country with tariffs impacts everybody. And there is an example I never would have thought of, but it's entirely possible that that's the case.
That's interesting.
Well, we do know. I know that there's a delay on tower builds in that area because of a delay with steel delivery. However, as far as everything we can tell, those towers are still on schedule to be completed sometime this summer, so to wrap up before the end of September. But, yep, I actually was involved with those calls, and there was a couple-week delay with like 24-hour notice to the steel delivery. So, you know, these unforeseen events pop up all the time, too, and I think, you know, we mentioned it with timing with getting the zoning and the permitting and things like that. So, you know, when we have a project that can come together and it looks perfect and you think it's going to be, you know, come to fruition within 5 months and it takes a year, not only does that delay, of course, you know, everyone's service, but it also delays even what that project initially looked like. Technology is changing so quickly. Needs are changing quickly, even composition of communities. So when you put together a grant application for funding and if it isn't complete or doesn't come to fruition for 2 years, your needs 2 years from now are quite different than they are at the time of application. So I think it's really important when communities are looking at projects that we're doing it proactively instead of reactively, because this is one of those industries that, you know, technology becomes antiquated rather quickly, and you really have to be looking at what's coming ahead instead of what was behind you.
Okay.
So, with respect to this caller's needs going down when tourists are in the area or when there's heavy usage, there are definitely technological fixes to that. And I would encourage this caller, A, to contact their carrier and let them know you're unhappy with the service that's being provided. But, B, look at other carriers. Carriers are very, very sensitive to this. And if their customers start voting with their feet and with their dollars, they will pay attention to this, because there definitely are technical fixes to that.
Okay, Judy from Irma is on the line. Judy, thank you for calling. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you had a question about why Internet can't use other utility lines. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, this ties into a previous caller, but I've often wondered, we have electric lines all across the state. Why can't broadband or fiber optics use those lines?
So I can address that. The first answer to that question is they do. Virtually all of the distribution, the high voltage distribution lines that you see all across the state have fiber optics run with them. There were other some of the medium voltage distribution systems do not. And in some cases, the utilities do not have rights of way to provide fiber on the poles that they're either leasing or renting from local municipalities. There was a technology 10 or 15 years ago for broadband.
In the back window. It is a cop, and there's a window between the back and the front.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure what that was. I apologize. I know we have another caller that had a question. Let's see if we have Nancy from Eagle River on the line. Nancy?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. You had some issues with companies providing to rural residents. What was your question?
The question is, we live in an area surrounded by broadband capability, and our provider, I've contacted directly, and they claim to our town, Washington, that they have us included in an area that should be able to receive broadband. However, there is a cluster, including us, of like 5 or 6 homes where we do not have access to broadband. They've not run the lines to us, even though the resorts and many other private homes around us have that access. What can I do to pressure them further or to, get them to understand that I need internet too?
Okay, thank you, Nancy. What do you have to say about that?
Is this, I guess the question I have is this a local telephone company that you're dealing with?
Yes. Can I name the provider or no? It's a national telephone company.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah, they just say that they cannot.
Well, it depends. If you're getting your internet or, the proposed delivery is something called DSL, which is a internet technology that uses existing copper telephone lines, it is very possible that you are further away from their switching point, or it's a thing called a DSLAM is their acronym for it. You may be further away from that space than the current technology that they have available to them is capable of spanning. And, for example, up in my neighborhood, there is a cluster of homes that is too far away from the phone company's little station to be able to get DSL, whereas I am just within the maximum range and I can just barely get it. But that may be what the situation is. And the way for them to fix it is they have to make an investment in your area and provide a facility to extend the DSL out to you.
Nancy, it doesn't...
Yeah, I think...
It sounds like you're not alone in this. I mean, we hear that from people all the time that are like, hey, my neighbor down the road has it, but I can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
that's got to be really frustrating for you. I guess I don't know the answer to...
Well, I would say just continue to bombard your provider with requests, and eventually, you know, if you have neighbors that are in the same boat, you know, all of you get together and start, you know, calling your provider, and eventually they will get the message.
Do you think it's worth contacting state representatives or, you know, I mean, your...
couldn't hurt.
your municipalities? Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
Get creative. There may be other providers of which you're unaware, whether they're fixed wireless providers, whether they're actually telecom cell companies, cable providers. Take a look at the Public Service Commission's website. They do have maps of broadband deployment, and you may find that there is another provider in your area that can help you out.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for calling, Nancy. I really appreciate it. Yes, thanks for bringing that up. Go ahead, Steve. You were saying?
I was just going to say, for national telephone companies these larger telephone companies, you'll find that they are pretty much not responsive. The folks that are very responsive are the local telephone companies, especially the co-ops. You'll definitely get their ear, and it's not going to help the caller, but those who are served by local and cooperative telephone companies or telecommunications companies, they are very responsive.
Well, I will say that probably even 8 years ago, 8-9 years ago, broadband expansion in rural Wisconsin communities was pretty much unheard of. But now the state, we're hearing, has a goal of ensuring connectivity in the entire state by 2025. How realistic do you think that goal is? To have everybody connected by 2025? Phil, maybe you can answer that.
Well, I'm not sure if they're going to get absolutely every possible place connected by 2025. That is a very ambitious goal. But I would venture to say that it would be possible to connect, 95%+ of the people in this state. And, it's going to take a coordinated effort. It's going to take a multitude of different technologies, and I think as time goes on, as 5G technology starts to emerge, that may also be applicable to some of these fixed wireless systems, which brings more bandwidth to more people.
Steve, what's your take? Do you think it's realistic? 2025, everybody connected?
I am right in line with Phil on this, but it's not reason to despair. Again, perfection is the goal, both with respect to fiber deployment and 100% coverage. It's not entirely attainable. That doesn't mean we just sit on our hands and do nothing. Let's continue to work together and make things better and shoot for 2025 as 100% coverage.
Stacy, what do you hear from businesses in Oneida County about this issue? I mean, do you hear from them specifically that they are supporting these efforts? I know that you've got efforts underway in Oneida County right now. So what are you hearing from businesses?
Definitely there is a support for this. Both one of the biggest challenges that we have is the workforce and making sure that we have enough people here to fill the jobs that not only we have now, but that we're going to have in the next 5 to 10 years. Connectivity is a huge factor in that. We need broadband for people to bring their families here and to work, invest, and want to live here. So even just with that factor, it's a huge issue. And on that previous topic, 2025 is a great goal. It's going to take better coordination between counties. We need, neighboring counties to work together on funding and finding these gaps. As the PSC is creating this map of coverage throughout the state, it's stories like the caller that just called in from Eagle River that we need to identify these pockets and then work to establish more independent service providers, these smaller companies that can go out and work in the rural communities where they're willing to do 100, a population of 100 or even a population of 30 on a tower versus, our big guys that really won't look at these smaller communities. It's going to take a lot of creativity. Our businesses know that. They're very supportive. From small business to large, reports are saying 85% of the jobs of 2030 do not even exist today. And those jobs are so heavily based on technology. So without that ability to obtain and gain new knowledge is more valuable than the knowledge itself. That's how we're looking at the jobs of the next generation, 2025, 2030. It's not that long from now. So companies know without investing in innovation and technology, they'll be obsolete. So.
All right. I wish we could talk about this for hours. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for today on Route 51, talking about rural broadband access. I'm Shereen Seward. I want to thank our guests, Steve Bowder, Stacey Johnson, and Phil Heitmanek. Our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer today is Joy Ratchkramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we're going to talk about CBD. What is it? Why is it so popular? And perhaps most importantly, does it work? But until then, we're heading out of town.